Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reeder. My guest today is Syracuse City Auditor Alexander Marion. He was elected to the position as a Democrat in November of 2023. Prior to that, he served on the staffs of State Senator Michael Giannaris and Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. City Auditor Marion, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Longtime listener, first time caller.
Well, thank you for that. So let's just start with a real basic thing. A lot of our listeners may not be entirely sure what the job description of the city auditor is, at least traditionally. And then after you do that, we'll get into some of the ways that I know you're trying to expand on what the position does. But what traditionally is the city auditor's job?
So the way traditionally the city auditor's job has existed to be a check on often the decisions made by a mayor, but I think we need to be broader than that. You know, the city charter lays out only a handful of very specific responsibilities, including audits of things like license revenue and a few other matters like that. And then there's this clause that I love in our charter that says the city auditor shall undertake projects of their choosing to improve municipal administration. And I've decided to run with that one. The way I view the role is the city auditor's here to really be a check on our values, make sure that we are living up to our promises, and make sure that we're getting value for our limited resources. And yes, of course, that is our tax dollars first and foremost, but also what are our other limited resources? What are we getting the most value out of our human capital? Are we an employer of choice in this community? Are we getting the most value out of our physical resources, out of our infrastructure? Are we getting the value we need out of our public spaces and open spaces in our community? So how do we put all of that together into, you know, into the city of Syracuse and make sure that we are really getting the most for what we have to offer and delivering for the people who live in the city?
So tell me then how you're going about approaching that expanded role as you've defined it, and maybe give me an example or two of what you think, you know, illustrates that well.
So what I see as the way to approach that role is we have to look both inside and outside City Hall to improve what's going on. We're not on an island. For a long time, people have always said, Syracuse is unique. We're an island. The world doesn't affect us. That's not how it works anymore. We are an integral part of a county, of a state, of a nation, of a global economy. So how are we engaging with all of those different levels? So of course, I've done a lot of work already to figure out how we can improve our own internal affairs. That's why I did a report last year on improving police staffing. So we're using our police department more effectively. And I called for civilianizing more positions in the police department. That's why I did the most comprehensive audit ever on license revenue coming into the city to figure out how we can better use our regulatory powers to generate revenue for the city and make sure consumers are protected. But we are looking outside City Hall as well. And the first report I put out when I came into office was about AIM, which is Aid and Incentives for Municipalities, a state aid program that the city is a major beneficiary from. It's our second largest source of revenue. So we put that out there, and I went to Albany, I met with legislators, I delivered testimony, and I've kept fighting for more state aid. You know, I've been working on fighting for our federal aid, especially with the new administration coming in. I put out a report this January called Consequences of Change that highlights how much money not only city government receives, but the Syracuse City School District, and goes to different partners in our community. We get hundreds of millions of dollars in aid from the federal government, much of which, as we saw in the slapdash funding freeze, is potentially on the chopping block that could affect real people and real lives here in the city of Syracuse. So we're looking at both, how do we make Syracuse's government stronger and more vital for the people who we serve every day inside as we make decisions? But a big part of what we're doing is advocating. I think an auditor needs to be an advocate, fighting for what our city needs and fighting for real results from the people who impact what's going on in our community all the time.
So you mentioned that January report, mm-hmm. looking at the federal funding streams into the city. I can't help but ask you this question. Do you feel now like you're sort of watching the horror movie version of the script that you wrote in January?
There's a little sense of you're the guy in the horror movie in the first scene that sees like the blinking light at the facility and says, hey, we might have a problem here. I take no pleasure in seeing some of the things that I warned about coming to fruition. I didn't think it would happen quite so quickly, but it is, I think we need to be cognizant of the reality that we are subject to the whims and forces of the federal government right now. And I said this recently, the federal government does not do urban policy well. We abandoned urban policy probably in the 1960s, 1970s. You know, there was the famous Daily News headline, Ford to City, Drop Dead. And that's really what the federal government has been saying for Democratic administrations and Republican administrations for the better part of the last half century. It's been an abandonment of urban policy. And I think that under this current administration, there has been an acceleration towards that. Even the last few weeks, they are looking for ways to inflict pain and harm on American cities. And I think that's just absolutely wrong. A majority of Americans live in cities right now. And finding ways to make their lives more difficult and less efficient is not a way to govern a country. It's not a way to find success and find results. Looking at Syracuse, we receive millions of dollars directly from the federal government. That goes to support our community development department, our neighborhood and business development office. That helps make sure we have city planners there. That makes sure that we have folks there to ensure our housing programs are working efficiently. We get millions of dollars in public safety grants to the police and fire departments. We're in line to get one of the largest, it's called SAFER. It's a program to help communities and their fire departments. We're in line to get one of the largest awards they've ever put out. The check is supposed to come in March. I don't know if we're going to see it. I've not gotten a clear answer from anyone in the federal government about where that SAFER grant is coming. And we want to use that money to go buy a new fire truck and other important equipment to keep our firefighters safe. So I do not understand the federal government's accelerated war on cities. But let's look at the history of it a little bit. This goes back, I think Johnson was the last president who did urban policy well and understood the value and impact of investing in cities. Nixon didn't care, Ford didn't care. Carter, I think, notionally cared, but the train had already left the station. And then you get into the 80s and neoliberalism after that fact. And it has become increasingly difficult to manage a city in America today.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse City Auditor Alexander Marion. So it sounds like you really are taking a much more proactive and advocacy kind of role, in addition to the kind of retrospective looking at how programs actually spent money in the city. It sounds like your role is very prospective as well as retrospective, and at least with the January report we were just discussing, prescient as well. Have you gotten any pushback on that? Have you had any folks of note telling you, hey, you know, stay in your lane, or whatever the pushback might sound like?
You know, when I ran for this office, I said that I'm here to provide oversight of the decisions we make today in city government and insight into the decisions we are going to make tomorrow. And I don't think anyone likes oversight. No one enjoys it. And I certainly don't think anyone likes insight. Nobody really enjoys unsolicited suggestions. But that's the world in which we live. I think we all need to do our part to make government better and more effective and more efficient. Have I gotten much pushback? Not in a substantial and meaningful way, no. And I am much more excited about the fact that I get when I'm out in the community and I keep track. I've probably been to more than 150 different neighborhood meetings and community events since I've taken office. I am always much more excited and heartened to hear from neighbors and community leaders who say, you know what, this was a good idea. This is making a difference. I don't know why the city government hasn't passed this legislation before or why the state hasn't, you know, given you additional funding. So I am much more heartened by the support that I receive, which is much greater than any kind of, you know, grumbling or irritation I might have caused.
Well, one of the issues that we haven't discussed yet, and it's been in the news a lot recently regarding the city, is the testing of lead in the water. Is that something that your office has looked at, might look at, or is that more for the public health commissioner?
We're interested in looking at it. We are certainly interested in looking at it, but I think we need to look at it holistically in the context of lead, the threat that lead poses in all forms and all mediums. Lead paint is a huge hazard and I think is much more immediately common. We do need to do more work to address lead water lines, lead service lines that go into people's houses. But I also think we need to be replacing lead fixtures. And people may not always realize that they have these, and they may not always realize that this is a prevalent issue, especially in a city with an old housing stock. It used to be the case that a lot of your fixtures, your taps, your faucets, your handles, your internal plumbing in your house may have been made of lead. And especially in older houses that haven't undergone extensive renovations, you may have some of those lead fixtures still present. I think, and I called for this in a recent report I issued on the rental registry, we need to be working to move out, in addition to lead service lines, we need to be working to move out lead fixtures from homes and apartments as well, because that poses as much, if not arguably more, threat to people's health and well-being than the lead service lines. And we also need to be much more aggressive about getting lead paint out of homes. Now, I think this poses, every challenge I believe poses an opportunity. Lead remediation, whether it's digging out lead service lines, whether it's remediating lead paint, that's a job creation opportunity. And I think that we need to be doing more to invest in workforce development programs that lead people on a path to being lead abatement contractors. It is not a terribly difficult skill set to learn. I mean, there's a lot of skills, there's a lot of safety involved, but you don't need to be in school for 5 years and write a dissertation on it. You can go through a 6-month, year-long training program, learn how to do it, and get a job with one of these contractors that many of whom pay pretty substantially well. You know, they pay good wages to folks. So I think we need to be looking at how we transform the lead abatement crisis into a lead abatement opportunity and get more of our neighbors who need those jobs trained and on the ground. Because right now we don't have enough contractors to do the testing, to do the replacement, to do the abatement work. We need to get more people lined up and ready to go to do that work en masse. And that is a great avenue that our local workforce development programs need to be investigating further.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with City of Syracuse's auditor, Alexander Marion. He's recently just finished his first year in this position. So one particular report and issue we haven't discussed yet, and I have to tell you, you have changed something for me in this, is the attention to the road repair on the streets in the city of Syracuse. I heard this from you in a different venue, and I've noticed it now as I'm driving around the city. You're right. That there's an issue there. Just tell us briefly about that.
So Syracuse has more than 400 miles of roads, And it is a, making sure that they're all well maintained is incredibly, incredibly difficult. We go through a tremendous process every year to make sure that we try to get road repairs done in a functional and efficient way. One of the biggest obstacles to doing that is holding contractors accountable for the work they do underneath our streets. So in two separate reports I issued this year, I called for the city to enact a contractor accountability ordinance, which I'm pleased to say the Common Council passed, I believe, at their last meeting, that creates fines, creates an inspection program, and gives the city the ability to levy fines for contractors who dig up city streets and don't do a good job repairing it. Now, you might want to know, hey, why are all these like non-city folks digging up city roads? Well, it could be folks like National Grid. It could be folks like Verizon. It could be folks like Spectrum. It could be anyone who has access to underground conduits and repair facilities. So, and need to dig up the road to repair their equipment. I've also long advocated what I call a dig once policy, which is, and it was piloted in the minor administration here in the city, where you bring all of the folks who have underground assets together and get them to coordinate their repairs and coordinate their work all at once. So if you dig up the road, you fix everything underneath, you pave it over, and you're done, and you leave it. The challenge is when you have to do these piecemeal repairs, that's when you wind up with, you know, this like gross patchwork quilt on roads, and it gets bumpy, and they don't do a good job repairing it, or they don't repaint the bike lane correctly, which makes it less safe for cyclists. And I think we need to hold people accountable for doing work the right way on our streets, because that's the public's property. And we need to be responsible to the public for making sure they have great roads. And when you dig up the roads, that creates little tiny cracks in it, even a little ways away from where you might have dug your hole. Or if you don't seal it correctly, it creates more cracks. That's when water gets in. When water gets into the road, it heaves and thaws the pavement. When it freezes and melts and freezes and melts on days like this, well, it feels like things are just going to stay frozen forever right now. So you wind up with this freezing and thawing. That's how you get big potholes. That's how you get cracks. That's how water seeps further down and could damage water mains because the ground is heaving and thawing even more. So it winds up creating a chaotic situation. And that's why I'm glad that we passed the contractor accountability ordinance.
Well, moving to some really big issues now for not only the city, but the entire region. It seems to me that the two really biggest issues that are going to be facing the city next few years is, first of all, the redevelopment of the area that was most impacted by I-81. And then this is the East Adams Street area. And so the redevelopment that's going to take place after that comes down. And then, of course, the many transformations, and we could talk about this for days probably, that are likely to come for the entire region with the Micron semiconductor manufacturing complex in Clay. Briefly, if you could, because I know you have a lot to say about this, but what do you think are the big challenges or the things that the city should be keeping front of mind when we think about those two projects?
Briefly is always a challenge for me on these issues. I had a conversation with someone a few months ago who worked in the economic development space. And he told me that they were rushing to put together a funding request or some kind of proposal for changes that might have been related to the airport. And he said, you don't know what it's going to be like when, you know, 200,000 people show up here overnight. And I said, you know, I appreciate that. I am certainly excited for the changes that are coming to our community. But I told this guy, I already represent a lot of people who live here. I represent 150,000 people who live in the city of Syracuse, who have enormous challenges already. Right now I'm worried about serving them and meeting their needs. And I think the biggest challenge we have going forward, whether it's the 81 project, whether it's Micron, and I see both of them kind of in the same vein of big change that's kind of being levied upon a community. I am worried that we are going to once again leave the highest need people we have here in our own community behind. We lead the nation in categories we should not be proud of. We have one of the highest rates of child poverty in America. We are one of the most segregated cities in America. And I think it is really hard to make the case for either big corporate subsidies or big, you know, investments in building new stuff for people who don't yet live here, when we've got so many people in our community right now who have that level of need. And obviously, I am not against growth. I am not against change. I think change is good. I think change is healthy. And we are going to need changes and investments if we are going to give the people who live here a better quality of life. But we need to be focused on making sure that we are not uprooting communities in a way that will cause them greater harm. Mm. I think we need to make sure that the jobs that are coming with Micron are going to be good union jobs. I think that's a wonderful thing if we can make sure as many of those jobs are unionized as possible so that we have a good, strong, dedicated local workforce, much in the vein as we did with Carrier, much in the vein as, you know, more regionally we did with Rubbermaid and some of the other major employers that are no longer around here. I grew up in the 90s and early 2000s. I remember watching on, you know, Channel 9 News every few weeks, company has more layoffs, company sending jobs overseas. Like, that is deeply ingrained in my childhood memory. I think when it comes to the 81 project, we need to make sure that if we are going to be transforming public housing, we need to do it in a way that is improving the quality of life of the people who live in public housing, not playing musical chairs with them and not taking away their sense of community. Because I hear a lot of folks say, well, public housing isn't good. It's in a bad place. It needs to change. I don't disagree. I spent a lot of time meeting with neighbors in public housing, knocking on doors in public housing buildings when I was running for office. I am aware that there are infrastructure challenges, safety challenges throughout public housing in Syracuse. But there's also a sense of community. There is a sense of pride in where people come from. There's a sense of, you know, there is a sense of ownership in those neighborhoods. And we can't, 60 years ago, we uprooted neighborhoods that had a sense of pride and a sense of ownership. They were not wealthy neighborhoods. They were not glamorous neighborhoods, but they were people's homes. I think we need to be really, really careful and cognizant of uprooting people from their homes and that sense of community. An apartment, you know, an apartment is not an apartment with equivalency. You know, you take someone who lives in Central Village or Pioneer Homes and you drop them over on the Near West Side in James Geddes, that's not their neighborhood. That's not their sense of community. That's not their people. That's not near their church. That's not near their doctor. You know, it's not a one-for-one replacement. You have to make sure we are respecting people's self-determination and their sense of community as we're trying to make improvements in these neighborhoods.
Mm. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and my guest is Syracuse City Auditor Alexander Marion. We got about 3 minutes or so left. I want to squeeze in a couple more questions if I can. This one's probably going to be more sensitive for you. We'll see. But I know that you have relationships throughout City Hall and you want to maintain those relationships. But I'm wondering if you might be willing to comment on the mayor's race so far.
There's a mayor's race this year?
Yeah, there happens to be one, Alexander. This is your newsflash. And it's become, I'll use a hockey term here. I think aspects of this race have become a bit chippy. So how do you see this? What do you make of it? Do you have any comment about it?
I am not a candidate this year, and I have not endorsed a candidate this year. I am, when I ran my primary, it was solely with the focus of going out and talking to as many voters as I could, making the case for why I would do this job well. The only advice I have for anyone running for mayor this year, don't spend your time talking to each other. Don't spend your time talking to the chattering class or party honchos. Spend your time talking to voters. And when you talk to them, introduce yourself and then listen. Because there is a tremendous amount of wisdom and experience in the Democratic primary electorate in the city of Syracuse. And I think everyone in this race would benefit from really taking some time to absorb some of the wisdom that those voters have.
And I want to come back to something we talked about earlier, and that is the Trump administration and the flurry of different things that are coming forward out of it. Do you think that we're entering some kind of entirely new era when it comes to the relationship between cities and the federal government? You were talking about that before, but if you think we are like entering something that's qualitatively different from our past, how would you describe the era? And again, we've only got a little bit of time, so just a few seconds on this one.
I think we are, I don't know if it is qualitatively different, but I think it is, we have accelerated a rapid disinvestment. I think if I were to call it, I would say it's the, we are in an anti-urban era in our federal government, and we desperately need to change that.
We'll have to leave it there. That was Alexander Marion, Syracuse City Auditor. Alexander, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me. Very informative.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher. The program is edited by Mark Levonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.